have a quorum yet, but we are going to start on time. Representative Blaine, if you'd like to sit and present your bill, and given that we don't have a quorum, we can't move your bill yet, but we're going to start to hear your testimony and move forward with the agenda. Welcome to the committee, Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Chairwoman Holberg. For the record, Representative Greg Blaine, District 12B. Madam Chair and members, I bring forth today House File 210. This bill is kind of known as the Car Fire Bill. With me at the table today is Rob Vinosik, representing Minnesota Association of Townships. Members, this bill, the intent of this bill is to fix a hole that we have in statute, whereas people who have car fires on our roadways, where townships and township fire departments are called to extinguish these car fires, have no ability to recoup the expense for extinguishing these car fires on individuals who choose not to, for whatever reason, to pay for the service that's being rendered. This is a bill that we've had through a number of committees over the past few years, and it's always seemed to end up in getting lost in the end game here. And so it's our intention to be able to answer questions pertaining to the bill, and hopefully get this thing passed and get it to the House floor. The League of Minnesota Cities have sent me a correspondence that they are in support of this piece of legislation, and I guess if members have copies of the bill, I could go through the bill, or we can stand for questions. It's a pretty straightforward piece of legislation.
Representative Blaine, if you'd like to go through the bill, or your testifier, whatever your preference.
Okay, maybe I'll let Mr. Vinosik speak to the bill here too.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Vinosik. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chairman, committee members, my name is Rob Vinosik. I represent the Minnesota Association of Townships. Pleased to be here with you today. This bill was worked on for the last few years, as Representative Blaine mentioned. I haven't been through the, I guess this has gone through numerous committees each year, passed, never had a vote against it, and has been, a couple years ago, sucked into tax omnibus bill, and last year was put into the transportation omnibus bill, and unfortunately we haven't seen those bills progress all the way into enactment. So here we are again today. The bill is supported by the Minnesota Association of Townships, the League of Cities, I believe the Minnesota Fire Chiefs Association, and we do have the Van Ness Heights Fire Chief with us today to answer particular questions. But the bill basically states that when a motor vehicle fire happens in the right-of-way in a jurisdiction of the township, that the first thing that happens, we send folks the bill. We send them the bill for services rendered to put out the fire. They can choose to pay the bill or submit it to their insurance to have them pay us for the services, or they may choose not to pay the bill.
If I could excuse just for 1 minute, we now have a quorum. I'll call the meeting to order. Ask that Ms. Scott note the roll. And Representative Anderson moves the minutes from the Tuesday, February 15th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted, and I will officially move House File 210 to be considered by the committee. Thank you.
And if the bill is not paid and they live in our jurisdiction, we're able to put the bill on their, as a special assessment, onto their property taxes. They can then pay that as part of their property taxes, which most people are more inclined to do when they receive it as a bill on their taxes. Compliance rates tend to be higher, I'm told. Or they can, appeal it to, to the town board, and I understand there's they have all legal options before them to, appeal it through the legal process. If they don't live in our jurisdiction, they live in the state of Minnesota, we could, and they own real property in the state of Minnesota, we could pass on to the state or the county auditor in that county and have it placed on their property taxes. That is Section 3 in the bill, to work backwards, if you don't mind. The county auditor then would receive the special assessment from the property taxes and then remit that to the township in which it provides service. If they were a renter or perhaps they lived outside the state of Minnesota, then the township would be able to apply to the, we're setting up an account in the, within the Department of Transportation that mirrors an existing process for grass fires. Right now, under current statute, a township must be reimbursed for if a car fire starts and they go and put it out in the right of way of a trunk highway. This would not be mandatory, but it would be optional for the Commissioner of Transportation to reimburse the township up to $300 for the cost of services provided in putting out the car fire. The bill, there's a fiscal note of $0, and that's because it's optional for the Commissioner of Transportation to take money from the general fund to reimburse the township. And of course, we're making it optional because we realize the state has not a surplus in the general fund. So at some future date, we might come back and ask that fund to actually be funded. That's as much as I can give you. If you have any questions, I'll stand.
All right. Thank you. Is there anybody else here to testify in favor of the bill? Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Ed Lear, L-E-I-E-R. I am the fire chief for the city of Vadnais Heights. I have provided a small handout to address the exposure issues to a community like Vadnais Heights as it responds to these accidents and fires within the city. For the last 10 years, the city of Vadnais Heights has protected 7.5 miles of interstates 694 and 35E. Over that 10 years, we've responded 540 times, or an average of 54 times a year. Our average cost to respond to a vehicle incident on the freeway is $250 an hour, and we generally send two. Using those numbers, we are spending $37,800 a year to go out there and provide public safety services for fires, accident with injuries, and grass fires to an organization or to a body that we collect no revenue from. We really cannot recover them costs. They are not all Vadnais Heights residents, and that's where our tax base is from. Minnesota State Fire Chiefs has had a long history of supporting this bill, and along with the City Council at the City of Vadnais Heights, we also support this.
All I have a few questions. Do you charge your residents for responding to fires within your municipality?
We do not individually charge them, but we are funded out of the general tax collection.
Certainly. And then of your 53 vehicle fires in the last 10 years, what percentage of them have you received reimbursement from insurance companies for?
None.
And do you know what percentage of the 53 are non-residents?
I do not know that. We have never billed for a service out there.
Okay, and then do you bill for any fire assistance calls within your jurisdiction at all?
Currently, we do not.
Okay. Are there any additional questions for this witness? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Blaine or Mr. Lear, regarding the situation in the bill of call, it says may be reimbursed by the commissioner. And I was just going to preface or ask Mr. Williams if revolving funds like this or accounts that have been set up
Mr. Williams?
General fund.
Mr. Williams, Representative Anderson's asking you a question.
These revolving accounts that are being set up here, have other revolving accounts that have been set up like this for whatever reason? I'm thinking of the aviation fund that a year or so ago took $15 million out of and use it for other purposes. Is that a very real possibility that we could do that with this fund also on a state basis because it's in the general fund?
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, this would be an account in the general fund. It would have no constitutional protection, and so the money in it could be used for other purposes by law at any time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Lear and Representative Blaine, we're going after a possibility of trying to get reimbursed for something that we're not sure that, you know, even if we go after it, that you'll have the money there. I know you don't have it now, but to say that we're going to have it in the future with the financial circumstances of an economic situation that we're in, are you willing to take that risk of having it established and then not maybe have anything in it to help you out?
Mr. Lear, if you can hold your thought. Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I would point out that on page 2, lines 19 to 22, there is an open and standing appropriation from this account to the Department of Transportation. So if the legislature wanted to take money out of this account, it would have to do so at a time when there was money accumulating in it. With the money automatically being appropriated to the department, it is unlikely that there would ever be much of a balance in that account for the legislature to reappropriate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Williams. I thought that would be the case with the aviation fund, too, that we wouldn't have much of a balance in there, and yet we had $15 million. Maybe that would make a different situation. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, that would be a different situation because there is no open and standing appropriation from the State Airports Fund as there would be under this account.
Okay.
And Mr. Lear, if you wanted to answer Representative Anderson's question.
Madam Chair,
Representative Blaine.
If it's all right, Representative Anderson, we're just looking to set up an account where these local fire departments or township-based fire departments would have the opportunity to gain some reimbursement for the services rendered. We're certainly not looking at building a huge account of dollars, and we recognize the fact that there may be times where there isn't revenue in there if it is not possible to collect to collect that, but we feel this is a step in the right direction, at least that there may be the possibility for some of our local township fire departments to actually be able to recoup some of the money that would be owed to them.
Representative Blaine, would it be fair to say that if in fact a car owner has proper insurance in the state of Minnesota, their insurance would be reimbursing these, so the problem lies mainly in people with that do not have vehicle insurance?
I think that would, Madam Chair, I think that would be a very fair assumption.
Okay, there's been some discussion around maybe a different approach with this, in that if you're driving without insurance and you shouldn't have a license, some type of process where you'd take away the license for failure to have insurance and have a condition of reinstatement that you reimburse the township for the cost of the fire prior to getting your license back. Would you care to comment on that at all?
And I do have some understanding on looking at this from that perspective too, instead of having an account set up through DOT, that it may be possible to look at handling this through DMV, through Department of Motor Vehicles, and the licensing part of that. I think myself and the interested parties on this piece of legislation would be willing to look at the possibility of going that route with this. Unfortunately, for committee members and maybe for the parties involved here, this discussion is kind of come up here in just maybe within the last hour or so too. So we feel that there probably is some alternatives that we would be willing to look at to maybe moving towards a resolve for the parties involved, the townships and the fire departments out there, that may be differing from what we have drafted in legislation at this point in time.
Right. Thank you, Representative Blaine. Representative Housen, you have a question, and then next I'm interested if MnDOT cares to comment on this bill at all. Representative Housen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I, for some reason, don't have my notes. Representative Scalzi had visited with me about this bill, which she supports because of her experience in the city of Adams Heights. But her understanding was different than the answer you gave when you asked, isn't this mostly people who don't have insurance? She laid out other scenarios because they don't live locally, why people don't pay those bills. That was a little more complicated and broad than just the uninsured. And I don't know if you have that information or if somebody else in the audience. I don't know, are there people here from Adams Heights or?
Representative Housman, the gentleman at the table is the fire chief from Vatican.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, if I could comment on to that point, Madam Chair and Representative Housman, you're correct. I've had this discussion both with the chief from Badness Heights and from the Association of Townships and the fire chiefs around the state too. Part of the problem here also lies in the fact that when we have local units of government like townships and township fire associations that are putting out car fires, it may be a township in Beltrami County that's extinguishing a fire on a vehicle that is owned by someone from Lesueur County or from Hennepin County. Becomes very difficult for those local units of government up there to try and get reimbursement, especially if we have individuals out there who are not as forthright as we are as far as being responsible for paying for services rendered.
And Madam Chair, in other words, the problem is broader than just those who are uninsured, because we'd want to be careful that we don't make that assumption, I think, if...
Representative Blaine.
I'll give you that, Representative Hausman. We know that there are a number of extenuating circumstances on owners of vehicle fires out there. Not only people who don't have insurance, people that maybe don't even own the car. And that is why, too, I acknowledge to Madam Chair that we would still be willing to look at maybe some other options in addressing this legislation, too.
Right, thank you. Is there anybody from MnDOT that would like to comment on this bill? All right. Thank you. Are there any additional questions of the bill author? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to make a point that's broader, but it's got the same principle. We're talking about uncompensated service here that you want to be reimbursed for, and you want to put on the property taxes of wherever the person lives that you're creating the service for. Do I understand that correctly?
Representative Blaine.
That is correct.
Okay. Now, I'll tell you where I'm talking about uncompensated care to the hospitals in Hennepin and Ramsey, which amounts to not $250 per occurrence, but it accounts for literally millions of dollars a year. Would you be willing to vote for placing that on when your county sends somebody down here to Hennepin County General to have medical services and is not compensated for it? Would you be willing to put that on your citizens' property taxes in your county when we don't get paid, because it's costing the taxpayers of Hennepin County literally millions of dollars a year to take care of services for your county and others around the state? Would you be willing to do that?
Representative Blaine, you don't have to answer that question, and Representative Earhart, I think your point's well made.
If I could just comment, Madam Chair and Representative Earhart, I understand the point that you're trying to make, but I would just say that not only does it cost the taxpayers of Hennepin or Ramsey County, but it costs the taxpayers, all the taxpayers across the state of Minnesota.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wanting to be supportive of this bill because I think they bring a real problem, and I know you've brought it a number of years. Isn't part of the problem that just the nature of where these stretches of highway are, we're dealing with very small local governments? Huge problems brought on by the fact that highway goes there and that the high-risk area is there, but it might be a very small local government. And I think that's the dimension to this that really needs to be emphasized.
And Representative Hausman, we've identified a number of concerns with this bill. It will be being laid on the table, and certainly you can work with Representative Salzy and Representative Blaine in trying to address some of the concerns. We're not sure we have it exactly right yet. If it's in the current shape, if Representative Blaine wants to stick with the bill in its current form without major modifications, it's going to make a trip to taxes as well. So we're trying to clean up some of this stuff and maybe even avoid having to go to the tax committee. So unless there's additional questions or comments at this time, I'll move to lay House File 210 on the table, and we'll work in the next week or so and see if we can polish it up a little, make it a little prettier, and move it forward. All right. Thank you very much, Representative Blaine.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next item members. On the agenda is House File 212, Representative Magnus.
Madam Chair, I move House File 212 be placed before the committee.
Thank you very much. Representative Dorman. Welcome to the committee, Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Appreciate being before the committee. Today we have House File 212. House File 212 is a bill that deals with motorcycle safety. For those of you on the committee, like Representative Magnus, who have I assume you have a motorcycle endorsement, when you go and get your endorsement for a motorcycle, that we all pay an additional $7 over and above what the normal fee would cost. We take that $7 and created a safe motorcycle safety program, and the $7 goes into the motorcycle safety fund. The original legislation said that any fee in excess of $750,000 is created by that $7 a year fund would, 10% of it would go into the general fund and 90% of it into the trunk highway fund. We're real close to where that is starting to occur. Not in big dollars, but it's starting to occur based on population growth and the fact that there's been an increase in the number of people who one of the ways they recreate is by driving motorcycles. And so what we're here to ask for today is that the bill you have before you would, and at the request of the committee last year, rather than take 100% of it, the bill would delete the 90% of the trunk highway fund. That's what the Transportation Committee was comfortable with last year, and not instilling that 10% into the general fund, thinking that, you know, geez, we don't want to contribute any more to the deficit, blah, blah, blah. And so that is the bill that is before you today. My preference, but always willing to do what it is the committee would be to, frankly, put a period at the end on line 17 and have it all stay in the safety fund. We have needs for it. We could, indeed, use this money to train people. I mean, it's a good program. I don't know if anybody's taken it, but my wife went through it when she got her motorcycle endorsement. She took the program. They come out. You know, you pay a fee to get in, but it's also part of it goes in here. Great way. There's advanced rider courses, and so it's a very, very good program. To my left, I think you'll recall the gentleman to my left, former representative and now county commissioner and lawsuit winner, Tom Workman, representing Abate. And so at this point, Madam Chair, I'd like to have Representative Workman discuss why he thinks this is a outstanding bill.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Workman.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Glad to be back, looking at old friendly faces, most friendly. I don't remember Representative Ruth mistreating me too often.
Representative Hausman,
Madam Chair, when I saw Representative Workman in the back, I announced that we would be taking down his bill. Now that I see the bill is Representative Dorman's, I, of course, am a strong supporter.
I appreciate that.
Your timing for coming before the committee is really good, Representative Dorman.
I was born at night, but it wasn't like
Madam Chair, from a good friend, Representative Hausman, I presume she thought I was still in the body here in the House and not free out doing whatever I want to do. It is good to, I do miss all the good folks, Representative Leader and others, and even John Williams, and but it's nice to have a different life after 10 years down here. So anyway, I didn't mean to take all your time. Somewhere 10 or 12 years ago, I became a biker. Actually got to experience a crash in 2003. It was all my fault. It was the same month I decided to sue a newspaper as a representative. So it was a big month.
Came out of both okay, though.
And that's right. As I was chairman of the House Transportation Policy Committee, now led by Representative Earhart, who's departed, I got to work with the bikers and the community. I am ostensibly the free director of government relations for ABATE of Minnesota, which is the American Bikers for Awareness, Training, and Education, and they're all over the state of Minnesota, and I just decided that I would continue to help my fellow bikers on issues. And so we have three different bills down here at the legislature, this one being really a question of fairness. We pay in, I pay in, Representative Dorman pays in to this fund. The fund was capped at $750,000. There is a very great need for training courses and other things that I myself have taken. In fact, I took my experienced rider class in 2003 with the cast on my leg. It all worked out, but there's a great demand for all of these different things that are going on, and we would like to have the money that, as the bikers, that bikers pay it in, and this is what they know it's for. It started to go over. I thought there might have been a handout around that showed kind of how it was going over. I was told by DPS that the fiscal note is inaccurate for 2005. There were some federal dollars that were gotten that were put into the number The number for 2005 is supposed to be about $22,000 over the $750,000 cap, is what I was told. So, depending on the year, we're not talking a whole lot of money here, but it is significant when you're talking about motorcycle safety programs that we'd like to keep going as there are more riders in the system.
All right, thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak in opposition to this bill? Okay, are there any questions from the committee? Representative Dorman, as you well know, general fund money is going to be rather tight this session, and you made the comment that you'd like to shorten up the bill a little bit. I can tell you this committee will have very little general fund money available, and so what my intent is this bill will be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and you and I can converse later about what your real needs are here, but I would say take your 90% of your fund and run would be a much safer approach given the budget situation this year.
Chair Holberg, I'm sure I was incorrect, and it looks wonderful the way it is.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Mr. Egan, did you want to add to the testimony? Okay. Thank you. Any additional questions by committee members? Seeing none, the chair moves the bill to be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Member.
The next item on our agenda is a presentation brought to us via the Met Council from the American Public Transit Association. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe Brian Lamb, who's the general manager of Metro Transit, and Mr. Jack Leary, with the after group that did our peer review, will be here to present this as quickly as I can get this hooked up.
All right, thank you. And members, you have two information pieces in your packets regarding this peer review study. And we'll give Mr. Shetland a minute to get his computer hooked up. We having technical difficulties?
No.
Oh, here we go.
Good.
We're on?
We are on.
Great. There you go.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lamb.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Brian Lamb. I'm the General Manager for Metro Transit. I'm here today to present Mr. Jack Leary and give him an opportunity to provide you some background on the peer system review that was conducted on Metro Transit operations this last fall in September and October. But before we get to that, I wanted to give you a little bit of context. As the members recall, last spring, Metro Transit had a 44-day strike, and upon the conclusion of that strike, there were several outstanding questions that remained regarding Metro Transit operations. And so at the urging of the governor, one of the things that we wanted to follow up on was to invite industry experts in to take a look at Metro Transit operations and look at perhaps the things that we're doing very well, some of the things that we perhaps could improve on, but with a special emphasis in an area called managed competition. Is Metro Transit is operating as cost effectively as possible. Mm-hmm. And so with that, we worked through the American Public Transit Association and put together a panel that really represents many of the industry leaders here. And they spent a couple days on the property and also reviewed several documents that we provided, and in late 2004 provided a report. Last night they had an opportunity to present that report to the Metropolitan Council, and today we want to give you the opportunity to listen to Mr. Leary's presentation. And so with that, let me introduce Mr. Jack Leary.
Thank you. Mr. Leary, so state your name for the record and continue with the testimony, please.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jack Leary, and I'm here representing the peer review panel of the American Public Transit Association. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to report to you the findings of this panel. As Brian indicated, this initiative began when Metro Transit asked this national association to assemble a peer group of five or six transit professionals, experienced people in the industry from both the public side of the business and the private side of the business, to look at Metro Transit and identify what they were doing right and identify what they needed to work on or what can be improved upon. Five of us were selected to come to Minneapolis and look at the system and look at the system with a particular focus on the subject of managed competition and innovative ways to deliver the service. The five panel members, just to share with you a little background of each of the members, John Petosiewicz is a principal in the firm of McDonald Transit Associates, a transportation management firm that manages 27 transit systems around the country. Big ones in like Charlotte, North Carolina, little ones like the Grand River, Ohio. Very respected individual in the business. Paul Jablonski is the chief executive officer of the San Diego Metropolitan Transit System, and he is the CEO of an organization that oversees several bus systems, commuter rail systems, light rail systems, and paratransit systems. He personally has managed public systems on the public side and the private side. An interesting footnote, he managed the bus system in the capital of Iran several years. Cal Marcella is the general manager of the regional transit district in Denver, Colorado. He's managed both private and public systems. He's a 25-year veteran of the industry and perhaps the most aggressive member of the panel in terms of the use of outsourcing and car transit services. His system in Denver is 50% contracted, outsourced, and 50% provided by the public agency. The fourth member was Rick Walsh, the recently retired general manager of King County, Washington. He's had a distinguished career as general manager of the system in Seattle, a 1,200 bus system with 5,000 employees. And I was designated as a spokesperson for the panel, I think perhaps because I had the most service of the members. I have 38 years service in this industry. I began my service with the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority and concluded my career there as the chief operating officer of that organization. I moved on and became the CEO of the Bi-State Development Agency in St. Louis, an agency not unlike the Metropolitan Council, where we operated the transit system, built a new light rail system, operated several private businesses, a steam distribution system, a general aviation airport, and several parking garages. I moved on to become the general manager in Philadelphia, and then 4 years ago, semi-retired anyway, and became the president of my own consulting firm. JKL Solutions is a firm that helps private sector companies deal with transportation issues, and I have clients like General Electric, the Siemens Corporation, and the Massachusetts Bay Commuter Railroad Company. And as indicated, I have been the designated spokesman for the group. Now, each of the panel members came to Minneapolis. We were provided a great deal of information, background information about the system, back sheets on the system, the system's performance, things that they were looking to do, documents on managed competition, and proposals and innovative ways to run the system. We were also provided the transportation policy plan for 2030. And on September 30th and October 1st, the group spent 2 days here in Minneapolis interviewing people, inspecting the system, reviewing more material. And I have to say to you, we were very appreciative of the staff. They were very helpful. They made everything available to us, and they made our job as easy as could be possible. Our mission for these 2 days was to review the current operations of the system, proposed initiatives, innovative approaches, and the managed competition aspect of providing service within the industry, all designed to support a more effective and a more efficient use of the system. This effort allowed us to frame some opinions on Metro Transit service, some opinions on the organization, and some opinions on the service itself, and provide the Metropolitan Council and Metro Transit with some recommendations to move forward. And today I'd like to share some of those observations with you. First, we looked at the bus system, the condition of the bus fleet, and unanimously we concluded that the folks that are running this transit system, they know what they're doing. They understand the business. They know what's important in this business. We unanimously concluded that they're doing a very creditable job. We looked at the state of maintenance for the bus system. And again, we concluded that the folks that are maintaining the system, they're professionals, they know what they're doing, they know the business, the fleet is well maintained, they understand the difference between corrective maintenance and preventive maintenance, and as they recognize that the rolling stock, this fleet, is a huge asset to this region, and we have determined that they will clearly get the design life of their bus fleet, a design life of 12 years and perhaps longer. We looked at the quality of the service they performed, and not only the quality, but the performance of the service. And I have to report to you that you have some real workhorses in this region in terms of bus routes. We looked at 3 bus routes carrying over 45,000 people, 45,000 boardings, just on 3 bus routes alone. The number 5 with 18,000 boardings every day, the number 16 with 14,000 boardings, and the number 21 with 13,000 boardings. That's pretty impressive for a transit system. We also looked at the way they measure their performance, the performance statistics that they put together. The system takes 14 peer transit systems around the country. Systems as small as 500 buses, systems as large as 1,200 buses. And they compare themselves with certain performance criteria. And I can report to you that utilizing this criteria, they're low where they should be, and they're high where they should be. Boardings, for example, per revenue hour, 34 passengers per revenue hour puts them in the mid-range of their peers, but it's a very respectable number of every hour of buses out there for 34 passengers per hour. In terms of the fare box and revenue, this transit system has a fare box recovery ratio of 32%, meaning 32% of the cost of operating the system comes out of the fare box. That puts them third among their peers, among the 14 transit systems that they compare themselves to. It was really interesting to note that they also have the highest revenue per passenger of 89 cents of any of the 14 transit properties across the country. And we think that's in large part due to how creative they've been over the years in terms of marketing the system. For example, MetroPass system and the Transit Works program and the user pass with the University of Minnesota does a lot to add ridership to the system. We were also discovered one particular instance where there is an employer in the region selling monthly passes to their employees for $18, yet the transit system is selling the monthly pass to that employer for $65. It's a win-win for the transit system, it's a win for the employer to provide that benefit for its employees, and it's a win for the employee that, by the way, the $18 that the employee is spending is pre-tax dollars. So it's kind of a secondary benefit.
Mr. Leahy, we have a couple of questions. Representative Hausman.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, if we're in the top 3 of fare box recovery, who are the other 2?
Of the 14,
Mr.
we are
Leahy.
Third from the top. The other 2 were Philadelphia and...
This fare box recovery?
I'll have it by one more thing. I have it with me.
I just busted. They're real. They're all expensive.
Miami was the second highest.
Huh.
Metro Transit here was the third highest.
Representative Abrams.
Well, Madam Chair, sometimes there's an exchange of information, Mr. Leahy. One of the reasons that the Metro Pass program is utilized to the extent it is in Minnesota. I'm the de facto tax committee chair in the 1999 tax bill. We enacted a piggyback tax credit program for employers that piggybacked onto the federal tax credit, and the criticism that I received at the time is all I'm doing is throwing money at corporations that are currently doing this. But I think if you would check with Metro Transit, you'll find that the number of employers that have utilized this program has grown exponentially because of the piggyback tax program. And as you're doing peer reviews in other areas, I, as a Republican, will tell you that it does influence behavior and it influences it extensively among employer groups.
Thank you. Carry that back.
Thank you. Please continue, Mr. Leahy.
Okay, thank you. A few more observations. We have a
technical glitch.
Okay. I can continue along.
You certainly can. We have these materials in our packet.
Yes, okay. Thank you. A few comments about the staffing levels of the organization. We looked at the staffing levels and determined that they're just about where they should be. They're very appropriate in terms of supporting the system. The system also uses technology, we thought, in a very creative way. Takes advantage of the efficiencies that technology brings about. They're using technology in the area of maintenance, in the area of scheduling. They have an automatic vehicle location system, so they can manage the bus system. They know where every bus is. We thought that was very impressive. The panel was also impressed with the sector planning that goes on in the region, consistent with the industry's best practice. You break up the region into sectors, you divide the region up and identify the needs of each sector and try to provide transit to respond to the needs of each of the regions, each of the sectors in the region. We also thought congratulations was in order for the very successful startup of the light rail system. Ridership looks to be very, very strong, and they've taken the next step now. They've integrated the bus system into the rail system to achieve even greater efficiencies in terms of the service delivery. Now, we were provided with a great deal of material and studies, and we thought that was a good starting point. It was clear that there are people, public policy people and transit people in this region that want to take this transit system to the next level of success. I've mentioned the word proposal and kind of innovative approaches for managed competition in these studies. These studies identified a number of initiatives, and we thought they made sense and they should pursue all of the strategies that they have been studying within the context of a business plan. If it makes good business sense, it's something that should be done. Now, you're not going to outsource everything, and we're not recommending that you outsource everything, but if there's a good return on their investment, if it's a good initiative to control costs, we think you should proceed with it. Now, there were also peer measures that I've referred to, noted within the resource material, the criteria they use to manage their own performance. There are 12 measures being used at the organization, at the transit system, and we think those are solid measures. They indicate the performance of the system, and we recommend that they continue to use those systems. As we looked at the system, though, we continually ran into one issue, and it was this issue of unpredictable funding. The lack of a stable, dedicated, dependable source of funding to support the system makes it very difficult to plan, even in the short term, for the system. A funding mechanism that also has a growth aspect to it to accommodate inflation. It's just missing in the organization. And consequently, it seems that the organization spends a lot of time going from crisis to crisis to crisis, and the inability to plan a program to get itself out of that situation. And I have a few more comments a little later on under the recommendations on that issue. We were in town shortly after the strike, and it was clear that there is a troubled labor situation. It's something that needs to be dealt with. As we also looked at the cost aspect of providing the service, the cost per hour, for example, of providing revenue service, it's in the mid-range of the 14 transit systems. We were a little concerned about that because of the cost of living here in Minneapolis being different than the cost of living in some of these other areas. The expense per revenue hour is $92 and change to operate a bus route in this region. Again, being right in the middle of their peers. But the labor rate in this organization, if you rank the cost per hour, Metro Transit is 20th in the country in terms of its operator labor rate. But when you factor in the cost of living in the region and integrate both of them, it moves from 20th up to 9th in the national ranking, something that you should be aware of and continually focus on, and focus on it in a way to keep the costs down, keep costs under control. There's also, we discovered a lack of a short-term transit business plan. The agency does have a business plan, but we thought it was insufficient in terms of its focus. The business plan focuses on operations. We thought it should take on a new focus, and that the business elements of the organization. I have a few more comments in a moment on that regard too, as well. Panel was also concerned about a fractured organization structure. When I use the word fractured, I don't mean it's broken. I mean it's a lost opportunity that's not being captured in terms of the service delivery. Now, Metro Transit contracts out and uses outsourcing to keep its costs under control. But when things are outsourced, when a route is outsourced, it's moved to another organization. Metro Transit moves it either to the Metropolitan Transportation Services Group in the Met Council, Metropolitan Council, or there is the opt-out group. But it moves it outside the transit system, and thus the lost opportunity for the transit system to use outsourcing and contracting as a strategic tool to keep costs under control vis-a-vis labor proposals and things like that. I will have more comments in a few moments on that issue as well. And finally, we reached the conclusion that the organization has some very solid professionals in the organization that know what they're doing. But a significant number of these senior managers are approaching retirement age, and it's something that the transit system should keep a focus upon. Now, recommendations. The panel recommends that a short-term business plan be developed and that the existing business plan be refined and take on the obligation of addressing more of the business issues as well as the operational issues. That the business plan should be in the context of 5 years with an annual element, and that the business plan should identify the issues that need to be addressed, work plan to address them, and build tactics to address them so they can get some of these problems behind them. We think it's time also, if this organization is going to move to the next level of success, it needs to stabilize its relationship with labor. It needs to be a healthy organization if it's going to move to the next level of success. There are some very common interests between labor and management, public policy and transit and so forth, and we think they should move in that direction. Now, I referenced some comments a few moments ago about proposals and innovative approaches and initiatives. We recommend that they pursue the strategies that they have identified under innovative service deliveries. We think each of these proposals, a business analysis should be conducted of each of these proposals, determine what you want to do, assure yourself that there is a business reason to do it, and proceed along those lines. One of the issues the panel advised that they didn't think at this time that it should be pursued, and that's the whole concept of contracting in, bringing work from outside the agency into the agency. Some of us had some experience with contracting in, but we've never really been able to make it a success, and we were afraid that it's such a conflict with using outsourcing as a valuable tool to control costs, but at the same time trying to bring other work into the organization. Basically, we said we didn't think that should be pursued. In terms of the professional development, we thought that the agency should embark upon some clear programs to encourage the next generation, the success planning, the next leadership in the organization, to attend leadership programs and attend industry meetings so they become as skilled as the professionals that are running the organization today. Now, we looked at Metro Transit and the contracting opportunities in the context of what's happening around the country, what's successful around the country, and what's not successful around the country. And just a few comments on it. There are 500-plus transit systems around the country offering fixed route service and demand response service. Demand response service being what you have here as Metro Mobility. Relatively few large systems contract for more than 25% of their services. Now, small systems contract less, but one-third of the small systems contract all of their service. Now, in that context, we looked at what the Metropolitan Council, what Transit and Metropolitan Council are doing today, and today the Council contracts $66 million, or 23% of their fixed route and demand response service to the private sector. So that puts them at the top of the peer group, the top of the industry, actually, in terms of using outsourcing as a strategic tool, and they're looking to do more. Few other facts, 40% of the transit systems supply all of the services directly, 38% of the transit systems in the country provide some of the services directly, and 22% purchase all of their services. And again, the 22% tend to be those that are very small transit systems around the country. A few comments on the transportation policy plan, because the panel was very impressed with the transportation policy plan for the year 2030. It's a big picture look at the region. It's a long-term look at the region, and felt it was a guide for future development of the region, and in a sense a tool for growth management. Now, within our limited view, a limited opportunity to review the plan, the group did feel that the plan was a rigorous look at the region and addressed a good mix of modal applications for the region and for the future. The plan is a very good step, a very good initial step. It uses infrastructure to manage growth around this the Twin Cities region. The plan also should be used to encourage economic growth and improve land use, and investing in transit, the panel felt, is an investment in the future economic growth of the region. The plan supports mobility throughout the region, and the plan also recognizes that congestion is a very serious issue in this region and getting worse. Congestion reduction is one of the many benefits noted, and it's noted that through public transit service, congestion reduction can be achieved to some degree. The plan also noted that there were other very important benefits, such as improved air quality, reductions in energy dependency and consumption, and the creation of livable communities, just to name a few. A few recommendations. Successful implementation of the plan requires the development of action strategies to support the plan. Strategies for funding also need to be identified to support the implementation of the plan. The panel felt that use of the plan as an economic development tool was right on target. And regarding BRT or bus rapid transit, there are many successful applications of bus rapid transit around the country. It's lower cost, it's very, very attractive, but the panel felt that a word of caution and a careful consideration should be given to this modal choice here in this region, only because this is a very fast-growing region. Very impressed at how fast this appears to be growing, and you don't want to be in a situation to build something that will be at capacity when it's completed. So it just advises careful consideration of this modal choice.
On this point,
Representative Earhart.
Yes, Mr. Earhart, could you expand on that a little more? I don't quite. I read that earlier in your other piece, and I was wondering what exactly you mean by that.
Well, just
Mr. Leahy.
Just that it is in the plan. It appears that you're intending to move in that direction, and recognizing that you're growing so fast. Just wanted to send a word of caution, because it is a mode of transit that has limits in its capacity, and wanted to be sure that you were applying it in a way that would be successful in the long term. Nothing more than that.
Yeah, Madam Chair. In what other nodes would not be limited? In that capacity. I mean, you're talking about rail, where you can put more cars on, and you can only put so many buses on.
Mr. Leahy.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yes, I think that's the that's at least perceived to be the alternative. There are different applications for both of those modes. One has a larger capacity ability than the other. One has very attractive cost, lower cost features to it, and very attractive flexibility features to it that rail doesn't have. Rail does have capacity.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And just finally on this issue, the panel wanted to note that rail has been identified as the more effective means of economic development and use of it as an economic development tool. Couple more points. Went on rail management, the regional management of transportation. I indicated a few moments ago that we use the word fractured because of the current trend of breaking when you do outsource, you break it away from one agency and give it to another agency. And there are three groups, basically, in the region providing outsourced transportation. And it creates what we believe was a climate of potential duplication, of unbalanced cost allocation and so forth. And so, again, we wanted to send the signal that there should be some caution used in that. We thought it was, in fact, a very important strategic opportunity lost, the opportunity to use outsourcing as a balance to labor costs, and recognizing that you have outsourcing of 23% today of $66 million, that we thought that could be used more effectively in helping to keep the cost of providing service in check. In terms of recommendations along those same lines, the panel believed that the management of service delivery, as well as the development and the construction of transit facilities, would be optimized if it were located under one operating organization. Consistent with the previous recommendations, it was our perspective that managed competition is a healthy, it's a strategic, and it's a cost-effective tool, and that it should, in fact, be pursued. Along those lines, though, the panel felt that managed competition should be pursued incrementally, not all at once. Make a business decision and pursue it in that way. We did have some reservations. The managed competition strategies and some of the proposals that we looked at, we thought it was a very good beginning. We had some reservations on a couple of the proposals. There was a proposal in one of the studies that talked about contracting out bus servicing in the organization, outsourcing the fueling, the washing, the parking of the buses. We thought that had very limited opportunity to achieve anything positive, and that should be sort of put at the bottom of the list. We also, there were proposals about contracting out the training of bus operators and others inside the organization. They do a very good job at that today. We thought that also had a very limited possibility for return, and that should be put also on the bottom of the list. So finally, I'd just like to summarize a couple of key principles and conclude my presentation. First, I would say you have a very well-functioning transit organization. It's a very good system, and it's a system you can be proud of in this region. It's a system that's moving in the direction of managed competition. We think it's the right way to go. It's a very valuable tool to control costs. But I just want to say it's not a panacea, and it's not a solution to every issue. The service design standards that have been adopted by the organization are consistent with industry standards, and I think they're very solid, and they should remain in place. We think there is an issue. Stable funding for the organization should be pursued. Many transit systems around the country are having the same problem that Metro Transit is having in terms of its funding structure. Many of them are moving in this direction of fixing that particular funding structural problem. I will report to you that most of them around the country are looking at a small piece of a sales tax as a way to fund public transit and fix it for the long term. Last November, for example, there were 43 transit tax initiatives on the ballot around the country that passed, by the way. 43 of them passed, and most of them dealt with a sales tax. Along those same lines, this region, the operating funding per capita is very low in this region, the lowest of many of the peers. And finally, I just want to say, again, we're very impressed with the professionalism of the transportation policy and operating structure in this region. They were very, very helpful. I want to publicly thank them for making the panel's job as easy as it was. And again, Madam Chairman and members of the council, thank you for allowing me to make this presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions. One is on page 6, on the recommendation, reduce the cost of service delivery. Would it be fair to assume, though, that as the system grows, the larger the system, the greater the opportunities for efficiencies, and that if we're in growth mode, that some of that reduction in the cost of service delivery is more possible with a larger system.
Mr. Leahy.
Yes, I believe to some extent that is true. There are more opportunities in a larger system than there are in a smaller system. But I think as you expand the system today, you look at introducing the efficiencies right at the beginning. I mean, light rail in the corridor has only been open a few months, and already they have redesigned the bus system to sort of incorporate a whole series of efficiencies and make it the modal splits much stronger and much easier.
And then,
Madam Chair, the other is on the issue of managed competition. You talked earlier about that we already have some administrative duplication because of some of the governance issues. Isn't there a possibility, if you just measure total costs, that managed competition reintroduces administrative duplication because all the competing companies have the administrative piece? And I think where I'm making my assumptions there has something to do with our experience with healthcare and what we thought might happen with managed competition. I don't know. I've got some thoughts about that.
Mr. Lamb.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I think the panel's perspective, and it's Metro Transit's perspective as well, that if done with kind of, right focus, that you really look towards making sure that you're, getting exactly what you're paying for, that you're not paying for additional overhead and unnecessary duplicative services, that it can be a very cost-effective way to go. But you have to be cautious in how you approach that, and even some of our current contracted services, as Mr. Leary had pointed out, we do have some potentially duplicative support services around, let's say, some of our contracted bus routes that, in order to make them operate. And we need to kind of revisit some of those. But even as we look forward, we also need to make sure that we are not buying, let's say, the Cadillac when we really want to really focus in on the Chevrolet-oriented services, if you will.
And, Madam Chair, just to follow up on that, I guess what I'm thinking is every contract, you don't just purchase the service, you purchase the overhead, too. I mean, they are going to build into every contract the overhead. So if you are paying for the overhead in each company that you might contract with, and you also can't totally get rid of the administrative level in your organization, that's the thing that concerns me. You're paying.
Mr. Leahy.
Sorry. I think that's why we were designed our discussion around conducting a business analysis of each of those decisions. If the service that you're buying from the outside can be accomplished at a lower cost than you can provide it yourself, given the private carrier's overhead may be substantially lower, there may be profit margins. I mean, there may be a number of things. I know in other transit systems, services that were further away from the core were more attractive to contract out because the transit system had further to go to get to the suburbs, and there were bus companies in the suburbs. So all of the things together enabled the outsourcing to be much more efficient than doing it yourself. And each time, I think you want to conduct an analysis and make a business decision to whether it makes sense to proceed.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, and congratulations on the Red Sox and Patriots. I wanted to ask you about your point about unpredictable funding, and was it your concern? You know, we have different funding streams going to Metro Transit. Was your concern about the reliance on the state general fund, which has been, over the last 5 years, there have been a number of cuts with that. I think 4 cuts in 5 years, or was it with the motor vehicle tax, which has also been not very level, or both? And do you have a recommendation about, you mentioned the sales tax, but Which one or both of these concern you the most?
Mr. Leahy.
I think it was the motor vehicle tax that sent the signal to us that the funding structure is broken. We looked at, and we looked at some of the other funding that sources that support the system, and there just didn't seem to be anything that was either dedicated and reliable enough to allow the system to move forward and predict what it would get for the next year, so they could budget against that, at the same time solve some of the problems, so it would no longer be an organization that just a crisis to crisis to crisis. Some of the fixes that have been put in place over the years seem to be short-term, not permanent kinds of fixes. Didn't resolve the problem. So as a panel, we felt that we'd be remiss if we didn't at least make a comment that, a reliable, long-term funding stream should be considered in the future to support the system. Fix the funding structure as much as the funding in dollars that go to the transit system.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Leahy, did your group interview anybody who might be identified in the critics column of Metro Transit, or did you rely all on information provided to you by the Met Council?
There were a few folks from outside the organization who we talked to, but mostly it was people inside the organization. We talked to some people on the buses, some customers, talked to some bus operators. But I can't say to you that we looked for anybody that was identified to us as a critic of the organization.
So would it be safe to say that the people that you interviewed outside the organizations were supporters of Metro Transit?
No, I wouldn't, actually. I think we tried to focus our attention on facts, on factual elements, and look at the data and report back to you what the data was telling us. We did want to talk to bus operators, wanted to get a sense firsthand, for example. Were they well-trained? Did they know the job? Were they just good at the mechanics of driving a bus, or did they really understand the job was the interface with people and the customer service aspect of their job? When I say we talked to people, that was the approach to talking to people, not looking for people that were either supportive of transit, or not supportive of transit.
Mr. Leahy, then, did you put up the list of the people or types of people you wanted to talk to, and Met Council supplied those people to you, or how?
No, we went independently on our own and just talked to people.
All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my understanding was what you were here to do was look at the internal management as it compares to peers across the country. I mean, wasn't that more the focus, not pro or con transit, but analysis of this management of this service compared to peers?
Mr. Leahy.
Yes, I would say that was precisely what our mission and our direction was to do.
And Representative Hausman, critics of Metro Transit aren't necessarily anti-transit, but rather think there might be a better way to do it than what is being done under the current structure or planning. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Leary, you mentioned in one of your recommendations here for regional management, it says the panel believes that management of service delivery should be under one operating organization. Did you find the system here helter-skelter, that you are there's too many different people managing things, and you're concerned about that in making this recommendation?
Mr. Leahy.
Yes. Thank you. Sir, I don't think I'd want to refer to it as helter-skelter, because I don't think it is that. I think it is managed. But I thought the panel as a group thought that having three organizations doing substantially the same thing, and again, I keep going back to, it was a lost opportunity. They're doing a decent job at it. Each of the three organizations are doing a decent job. But the lost opportunity relating to using outsourcing as a strategic tool to keep your costs down. Because when it leaves the organization and goes someplace else, it's sort of like no longer part of the essentially the Metro Transit Organization. Now, Cal Marcella, the general manager from Denver, who may have been the most aggressive on the group in terms of outsourcing, he made some very compelling, gave some very compelling examples of how he uses outsourcing. And when proposals come to him on his desk for the $25 an hour bus driver, he reaches to his private sector operations and says, "What can I possibly do? How can I possibly do that? I have a whole organization providing the same service at $18 an hour." Gives him a good opportunity to say, "Let's work together. Maybe we can find other ways to lower the cost of providing the service to this region." It's a tool.
Thank you, Mr. Lamb. Instances of contracting in were presented as alternatives to this group, and opportunities for more outsourcing?
Madam Chair, in terms of contracting in, several of the opportunities we presented to the group was in our maintenance area. As you may know, that we have, for instance, a unit overhaul base over here in St. Paul that, when we do cost comparisons in terms of rebuilding engines, transmissions, those kinds of things, we find that we are very cost effective with the private sector. And so those were examples, primary examples of what we've provided the peer review, or the peer group. Their response to that was, focus on your core business and continually refine that before you introduce new business concepts. And so that's what we took away from that. There were several areas that we provided to them as contracting out opportunities. And in light of their recommendations, we are focusing on bus service we currently provide some bus service that ultimately are on the high end of our subsidy per passenger standards. And we think that by introducing a lower cost provider rather than having to, let's say, eliminate that service, we might be able to bring the subsidy down. So that was one area. The second one is in the area of our shelter maintenance on our bus side. We have several hundred shelters throughout the region that we provide. We thought that was a good opportunity for us to work within our management structure and within our own workforce to see whether they're with our labor rates, whether we could, in a competitive mode, compete with what we might see coming out of the private sector. And so, in kind of a direct correlation to Mr. Leary's comments, that way we could leverage that fact that we were going out in a competitive mode, and that is there anything internally could be done in order for us to bring our overall cost down. And consistent with the panel's recommendation of doing this incrementally, those two elements were what we called our 05 work plan, and that's where we're moving it towards in this coming calendar year.
I think. And then are there any other changes that have been identified as a result of the study?
Madam Chair, there's a series of changes that the peer group recommends, including, I think Mr. Leary referred to there's this 25-year plan out there, and you have kind of only 1 year looks at how you're going to accomplish that 25. It's like building a road just one foot at a time and hope it ends up at the right destination. And so the peer group and what we're taking to heart right now is building, I'll say, a mid-range action or a business plan that identifies not only our operational focus, how can we be more reliable, how can we be more cost-effective, all those kinds of things, but really talk about some of the fundamental, where do we want to be in 5 years against this 25-year plan, and then break it back down in the annual work plan. So that's a major area of change and focus for us this coming year.
All right, thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Mr. Leary, you had mentioned this issue of a troubled labor situation as a concern, and maybe all this talk of outsourcing, I'm concerned might make the you know, add fuel to the fire. But do you have, are there examples of transit systems around the country that, that you would feel, you know, might be models in terms of labor management relations, and in fact, systems have been able to, you know, create efficiencies but still maintain, you know, benefits and, you know, pensions and health care, et cetera, that the labor's fought hard for? Are there some examples that, that you think would be useful for us to look at?
Madam Chairman, yes, I believe that is true. And we have suggested to Metro Transit folks that they talk to different properties. They have this group of 14 peer properties, and some of them have been very successful in working together with labor to reduce costs. And there are a number of models that that could be modified to fit the Metro Transit situation. I think I'd want to do a little bit of research before I would recommend any specific properties to you, but this is not the first time that a transit system has had a troubled relationship with its labor, and I do know that they've already begun making strides in trying to repair the relationship. I know Brian personally has been meeting with members of organized labor to try to reestablish a working relationship and a communication with the group. Because many of the issues both need both parties to solve.
Representative Earhart.
Okay, I think I have three questions, Madam Chair. Is contracting in the same as outsourcing? Is that what we're saying here, or what?
Mr. Lamb, or Mr. Leahy?
No, it's just the reverse. Outsourcing is taking what you now do yourself and moving it into the private sector where you believe it can be done at less lower cost. Contracting in is going to the private sector and bringing some of their functions inside the transit organization and selling your services to the private sector.
I don't see much difference, but I understand now what you're saying. Relative to the rest of the country, do you find any more resistance to transit in general terms, or a particular mode of transit in this area? Did you notice that, those things at all?
Mr. Leahy.
I'm not sure that that fell within the scope of the panel to sort of assess the opinions and the perceptions of the region in terms of transit. Our mission was sort of focused on the facts of how they provide the service and how they may provide the service better. I think my view on that would be...
Okay, I just thought, Madam Chair, that you might have picked up some feelings about it, and if you don't... I know you didn't directly assess that, but my third question is... And if you want to add anything to my second question, now that I've made myself more clear, I appreciate it. But my third question is, my understanding is that property taxes are not generally used to support transit in most areas. But I think you mentioned some portion of sales tax are generally used for the region, I assume, that transit runs in. Would that be that what your findings are across the country?
Mr. Leahy.
Yes, generally speaking, I believe on the panel, believe that that's sort of the trend currently. There are some properties, some of the older properties that do depend to some degree on property tax. I know one of my properties that I worked on for years, Boston, for example, a very small piece of the operating subsidies come from property tax in the 175 cities and towns that constitute the district for that system. It's a very small portion of it.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Leahy, you mentioned in your general observations of our current Metro service delivery that in looking at all the bullet points that Metro service was generally good. And when I compare that to being in the military, because I'm still in the military, every 4 or 5 years, we have a what do you call an operation? operational readiness inspection, and we get classified as unsatisfactory, marginal, good, outstanding, or excellent. And I'm just wondering, since we're, if we can put ourselves in kind of a mediocre type situation as a metro service delivery in regards to the other transits across the state, because you mentioned 34 passengers per hour, you thought that was good, 32% of the revenue in this fare box, and that was good. How can we do better?
Mr. Leahy.
I think I probably would be violating the mission of the panel if I gave them a mark of A, B, C, and D, such as you just described, because we did not look at it in that context. I can tell you my perception of the panel, it was pretty unanimous that the panel believed that this transit system was well run. I mean, the people that are running it, they know what they're doing. Their performance statistics are in the top 20% of their peer group. I think the phrase I used when I talked about 34 or 35 people per hour average on every bus is pretty respectable. I mean, now you still have empty seats on that bus at 35 passengers per hour on an average, and we frankly liked some of the creative ways that the transit folks were trying to build ridership in this region. I know after the strike, the ridership fell 28 or 30%, and I know they've almost got it back, 2 or 3% close at this point. It's clearly a region that uses the transit system. I mean, those three bus routes that I referenced, the real work buses.
Madam Chair, Mr. Leahy,
Anderson.
Mr. Leahy, you're a pretty good politician.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Mr. Leary, I apologize for calling you Mr. Leahy for a while. I'm resisting glasses, but I'm afraid by May you're going to see them on my face in this committee. I think that concludes our presentation. Any additional questions or comments by committee members? Members, next week we'll start to move into hearing from some of the groups that have done studies on transportation finance. Some of the principals will begin to hopefully hear some of the transportation funding plans that have been brought forward. And so we'll probably spend a couple weeks on that basic information. And unless there's any other business to come before the committee, we're adjourned. Thank you.